Okay, hi everyone. I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Barbara.
What I would like to do is tell you my story for 7 minutes and then use the remaining 13 minutes to talk about things that might interfere with experiencing abstinence. What I would like to do is I'm only going to use 20 minutes and they're giving me 30 minutes. So what I would like to do is for the last 10 minutes, just open the floor to any questions because I really love that much better than just talking at you. And then I think there's time for people sharing also. But before I do any of that, I'd like to start with my statistics. I went to my first meeting on June 10th, 2000. At that time, I weighed 237 pounds. I've been continuously absent since the day of that first meeting, and it's been over 14 years since my character defects have made my life a living hell. I'd also like to tell you where I am today. I'm someone who has peace of mind, great health, fantastic relationships, financial freedom, worthwhile goals, and with the help of my higher power, I'm becoming everything I'm supposed to be. I'm living a life beyond anything I could have ever wished for. I'm happier than I've ever been, and I feel useful. Every aspect of my life has changed for the better as a result of coming to OA. I'd like to start my story with the week before my first meeting. Date is Friday, June 2nd, 2000. My boyfriend had come over and told me that due to my huge weight gain, he was no longer attracted to me. The truth is I had been trying to diet unsuccessfully the entire time we were dating, and the last time I'd been successful was a few years earlier when I was able to starve myself to get thin enough to go out trolling for a new boyfriend. But as soon as I found him, I started eating the way that I eat and ballooned up to 237 pounds. My solution for this was to go on a diet starting Monday. So I did what I normally did. I binged all weekend long on the foods that I swore I would never eat again and woke up Monday morning with all the resolve and determination to stick to this diet and get thin. I gagged down a disgusting tasting diet breakfast, then went into work where I saw that somebody had brought in 3 dozen Dunkin' Donuts, and I immediately downed 6 of them, then kept sneaking back to where they were every couple minutes to grab a few more until they were all gone. Realizing I couldn't stick to a diet, I came up with the brilliant idea that I would find some quack doctor who would put me in a drug-induced coma for 6 months, and then I'd wake up thin. But until that time, I was going to eat the way that I wanted to. Fast forward 2 days to Wednesday night when I took my oldest grandson to an all-you-can-eat buffet, where I proceeded to eat more than any rational, sane person would eat. And because I had eaten so much, I had pain across my chest and down my left arm. I was convinced I was having a heart attack and that I was going to die. So on the way home, I turned to this 5.5-year-old kid and said, "Just in case Grandma dies, remember I really loved you." And that wasn't even enough to get me to stop, because as soon as I got home, I started eating again. Fast forward 2 more days to Friday night, the night before my first meeting. My boyfriend had come over again, but this time he was swinging a business card in front of my face, telling me that some girl had given him her telephone number. And while I couldn't see her name or number on the back of the card, I did see the telephone number that was embossed on the front. Then he left. And as I ate and ate and ate, I decided I would call that number, find out where she was, and confront her. Turns out she had written her number on the back of an OA stop card, and the number I called was the West Jersey hotline. I wound up talking to a very happy-sounding woman who said, "Boy, are you lucky. There's a wonderful newcomers meeting tomorrow morning at 10:15 at the Parsippany Library." So I decided to go to the meeting to find the bitch that had given my boyfriend her telephone number. And that's how I found OA. The next morning, I went to the meeting angry. I walked into a room of 65 people, all smiling and laughing, talking about the things they used to do with food, how they don't do that anymore, and how great their life was as a result of that. What caught my attention was when the leader talked about powerlessness and said she had always wished she could go into a coma and wake up thin. After that, I really started listening to what everybody was saying, and when they talked about sponsorship, someone said, "If you're new, I strongly suggest you get a sponsor." So during the break, I did. My sponsor gave me her telephone number and told me to call her each day with my food. When the meeting ended at 12:15, my plan was to go to my best friend's daughter's wedding, where I would have my last hurrah and start this thing on Monday. But as I was leaving, my sponsor stopped me and asked me what I was going to eat the rest of the day. So I told her what I would eat at the wedding, and she told me to call her if I ran into any problems. I went to the wedding, and I made it through the cocktail hour. I made it through the dinner, And then they brought out the Viennese table. So I went out in the hall and I called my sponsor. She stayed on the phone with me for 40 minutes. It was the first time in my life anybody had done anything for me without expecting anything in return or being paid for it. And as a result, I had my very first of over 14 years of abstinent meals at a wedding. Next morning, I had another first. It was the first time in a very, very long time that I woke up and did not say to myself, you effing fat pig, you blew it again. Fast forward 4 months. I have my food plan. I'm committing it to my sponsor each day. I'm eating exactly what I committed. I'm working all the tools. I'm losing about 10 pounds a month, and I keep hearing about these steps. So I asked someone how to do them, and this well-intentioned woman told me the way to do the steps was to write a life story and look for common threads. I did this and came up with three character defects. I'm a jealous person who's unloved and unlovable. That weekend, I went to a retreat, and the first meeting on Friday was open sharing. So I raised my hand and shared that I'd just done my steps and that I have these three character defects. Turns out there was a woman there who had brought her recovered alcoholic boyfriend with her, who came up to me after the meeting and said, if you only have three character defects, you probably didn't do the steps right. Then he offered to spend the rest of the weekend taking me through the big book, teaching me how to do the steps properly. By the time I left on Sunday, I'd done steps 1 through 8. I was ready, willing, and able to make my 9-step amends. And because we had read from the doctor's opinion through working with others, I also had the instructions on how to do steps 10, 11, and 12. And I've been living in steps 10, 11, and 12 ever since. And as a result of that, I have this unbelievable, magnificent life. So before I switch the topic of 10 things I've heard in the rooms that may interfere with being successful in this program, I'd like to say that the things I'm about to say are based on my own experience in working with others, my working individually with over 300 people, teaching them how to do the steps as outlined in the big book, 14 years of having discussions with those who have long-term back-to-back abstinence, as well as those who have relapsed either once or many times, and my own experience and what works for me. Please note that anything I say should not be taken as a criticism of OA or any member of this wonderful group. My purpose in talking about these things is not to tell anyone they are wrong or bad or that I know it all, but just to give you the opportunity to think about whether what you sometimes hear others say is helping or hindering your recovery. Because the truth is, you are the only one responsible for how you feel, what you are willing to do, and what your success will be. And all of these are based on what you believe to be true. So if I say anything that goes against what's working for you, please don't take it personally and just ignore what I've said. If, however, anything rings true for you, then I suggest you explore what you need to change in order to meet your program goals. Here we go. The first thing I've heard is, there is no such thing as being recovered. I am recovering. The Big Book promises that if I do the work and follow the instructions, I will be recovered. The word recovered appears many times in the Big Book. In fact, the title page actually says, Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And the foreword to the first edition says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For me, being recovered is the place where, while I still may have the allergic reaction of craving if I put white flour or sugar in my body, I no longer have the desire to do so. It's the place where I don't have to make a choice whether or not I'll eat something that's not on my food plan because the thought of eating it doesn't even occur to me. It's the place where God comes first. It's the place where I stop being selfish, self-seeking, and self-centered. It's the place where I fit comfortably in my own skin and in this world. It's the place where fear has been removed and replaced by trust and love. The word recovering only appears once in the Big Book on page 121, referring to certain attitudes a wife may take with the husband who is recovering, meaning the husband who is in the process of working the steps. The thing here is to ask yourself, how does it feel to be recovering? I can tell you that when I had pneumonia and was lying in the hospital getting antibiotics and was recovering, I still felt awful with 104-degree fever. But once the medicine worked and I was no longer suffering from the effects of having pneumonia, I felt great being recovered from that disease. It's the same with this program. If I am no longer suffering from the effects of being a compulsive overeater, then I am not white-knuckling it, feeling deprived or unhappy, upset most of the time, running to the food for comfort, nor breaking my abstinence. The second thing I've heard is, all I need to do is take step one every day. If I had cancer and every day admitted I had cancer, but did not find a doctor, make an appointment, go see him, follow his advice, complete whatever procedures needed to be done, and change my lifestyle, I would be someone who still has cancer and all its resulting consequences. If all I do is admit I have the problem of being powerless over food, but don't do all the actions necessary to become recovered, all I am is someone who admits I have a problem, and I continue to be unhealthy and have a life full of resentments, fears, and harms to others. The third thing I've heard is, meeting makers make it. If I just go to a bunch of meetings, I am a compulsive overeater who just goes to a bunch of meetings. But if I go to meetings and apply what I learned to my life, follow the directions in the big book, and live by the principles of this program, then I am not only a compulsive overeater who goes to meetings, but one who works this program and therefore is making progress along the path of recovery. The fourth thing I've heard is, it's okay, honey, everyone relapses. Oops. Not everyone relapses. Relapse is not part of recovery. Sorry. Although it may happen. Relapse happens because as a compulsive overeater, if you haven't learned a different response than eating, you have no choice but to run to the food. If you fail to enlarge your spiritual life, which is the purpose of working the steps, the thought of running to God instead of the food won't even cross your mind. But if you work this program as it needs to be done, then relapse will no longer be a part of your journey. In talking to people who have relapsed and then found their way back to recovery, I was told the worst thing anyone can do is judge, ignore, sympathize, or encourage self-pity in those who have relapsed. Instead, honestly and without criticism, giving them the opportunity to talk about what they can learn from this experience, what they can do to avoid doing the same behaviors in the future, and especially working the steps as outlined in the big book, seems to be the way back to permanent recovery. The fifth thing I've heard is, my sponsor is my higher power. My sponsor is another compulsive overeater who has found a way out of all this misery and is willing to help me do the same thing. My sponsor is not my higher power. She is someone who teaches me, by using the big book, how to connect to and stay surrendered to my own higher power. If you want to see why your sponsor should not be your higher power, look at the steps that have the word God in them and substitute your sponsor's name there, and you will very quickly see why this does not work. For example, it is not my sponsor, but God, who I ask to remove my shortcomings, and it's not my sponsor, but God, who is able to give me the strength to do what I need to do. The sixth thing I've heard is, I'm a relapse survivor, bulimic, critical level food addict, or any other description other than a compulsive overeater. If I call myself anything other than a compulsive overeater, that makes me someone who has a disease worse than yours. My ego was smashed when I first came into the rooms, but if I start believing my disease is worse than yours, my ego rebuilds by making me think I'm the best of the best or the worst of the worst. Once my ego rebuilds, I won't reach out for the kind of help I really need or do the necessary work. The true spirit of anonymity is that we all have the same disease, so therefore the same solution will work for all of us. The seventh thing I've heard is, there's a meaning for men, gays, my ethnic group, or any other label. Overeaters Anonymous is for anyone who is a compulsive overeater, who finds they have an obsession of the mind, experience physical cravings, and wants to be free of the negative consequences created by these. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively, and anytime you separate yourself by adding another label, you have taken the main focus off the central theme of carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers and have isolated yourself as different and needing more than this program offers. The eighth thing I've heard is, just be abstinent and the rest will follow. For those people who only focus on sticking to their food plan, OA is not a 12-step program. To be successful, the focus needs to be on the steps whose purpose is not to stop you from overeating, but to teach you how to connect to your own higher power, and as a result, the need to overeat vanishes. Something I once heard really applies here. If I focus on my weight, I'll lose my program. If I focus on my program, I'll lose weight. Remember, the 12 steps are the program, and everything else is the fellowship. The ninth thing I've heard is, it doesn't matter how you do the steps, just do them. As a real compulsive overeater, my only solution is working the steps as outlined in the big book. If I were a hard eater, which is someone who has the same behaviors as a compulsive overeater, but given a good enough reason can stop or moderate without doing this program as it needs to be done, then I would be able to stick to my food plan forever by just going to meetings and not eating no matter what, or doing the steps any old way. That's not me. As a real compulsive overeater, it does matter how I do the steps. I have to do them exactly as they are written out in the big book. In order for me to get to the other side of step 12, where my main focus is not on the food or what others have done to me, but on being kind, caring, loving, and helpful, I need to do each step correctly. Step 1, admit I have a problem and eating or not, can't manage my own life well. Step 2, believe or I'm willing to believe that there's something out there that can help me. Step 3, make a decision to give this something a try. Step 4, do 4 5-column inventories, making sure that the 5th column lists the character defects and the 4th column lists the actual behaviors played out by these defects. Step 5, admit my character defects and only the character defects instead of having a psychiatry session where I rehash and confirm all my negative feelings. Step 6, now that I've seen on paper it's my character defects causing all my problems, I want them removed. Step 7, ask God to remove these defects and teach me to be their opposites and act as if I'm the opposite at every opportunity. Step 8, become willing to set right the wrongs of the past. Step 9, actually go out and make sincere apologies and restitutions, but more important, start to amend the way I think and act. Step 10, at the exact moment I am angry, worried, afraid, about to harm somebody or have harmed somebody, immediately do steps 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then 5. Step 11, keep conscious contact with God and be directed by Him. And step 12, carry the correct message and teach the steps to others. And the 10th thing I've heard is, I do step 10 at night. The nightly review is part of step 11. Step 10 is done at the exact moment I feel uncomfortable or realize something is out of sync. Step 10 is a continuous fine-tuning of who I'm supposed to be. It's God's way of putting me in the situations He wants me to be in so that I can learn certain lessons or practice being the opposite of my character defects. The difference between step 10, which is done immediately, and step 11, which is reviewing, planning, and being guided, is that step 10 is where God teaches me lessons, and step 11 is where those lessons are put into practice. Step 10 is where recovery actually takes place. After doing step 10 as it's supposed to be done, act once so I can immediately get rid of whatever has just blocked me off from my higher power and instantaneously reconnect with Him, certain things started to happen. I stopped fighting anything or anyone, even food. I was put in a place of neutrality, safe and protected, and the problem had been removed. In other words, I was now a recovered compulsive overeater as long as I stayed in steps 10, 11, and 12. And that's 10 things I've heard in the rooms that may interfere with being successful with this program. I hope that some of these things will help those of you still suffering from this disease by giving you a reason to rethink your belief system so that you can get everything this program promises, especially a life of sane and happy usefulness. Remember, it is entirely your choice what kind of life you have. With a simple decision of what you are willing to do, you can suffer in the darkness or play in the light. You can be angry, frightened, and enslaved, or loving, joyous, and free. Thank you. I'll just cry at the end.